Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Billionaire.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Kudlow. I'm Larry Kudlow. All right, Israel strikes Iran, and now we're all waiting for the next shoe to drop. We've got Congressman Mike Waltz and IDF Special Ops veteran Aaron Cohn. Hugh Hewitt's coming on. Why Joe Biden doesn't even know he's at war with Iran. DeRoy Murdoch, Roman Duravi, and Brooke Goldstein on the anti-Semitism at Columbia University. And Senator Eric Schmidt defends drill, baby, drill. But first up, our own Hillary Vaughn, live from Capitol Hill with all the latest on foreign aid spending bill and whatever else. Hello, Hillary. What's cooking?
Hi, Larry. Well, this Israeli strike on an Iranian military base might have been one and done. Sources telling Fox's Jennifer Griffin that Israel was trying to make the point to Iran that they, quote, we can reach out and touch you with this strike. There's also a sense that both sides have made their point. As a U.S. official tells Fox, there have been no Israeli airstrikes or Iranian proxy attacks last night in Syria or Iraq. But Israel is striking back at Iran. That really turned the heat up here on Capitol Hill to get foreign aid out the door. House Speaker Mike Johnson managed to get dozens of Democrats to bail him out and help him advance three separate foreign aid bills with money for Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan in an additional package that has the revised TikTok bill in it. But Johnson says this piecemeal approach is a win for Republicans.
We did not pass the Senate supplemental bill. The Senate was sent effectively as a blank check for foreign aid. It was a better process to break the bills into four separate measures for consideration, and that is what we will have tomorrow. This is the best possible product that we can get under these circumstances.
Johnson risking his own future as Speaker to get these bills to the floor. As some Republicans in his party threatening to trigger a motion to vacate. Some conservatives wanted a forced vote on the border before playing ball on any foreign aid. Others wanted it completely paid for. But Johnson decided to go ahead and move forward anyway.
Well, there's continued frustration with the fact that we're allowing the allowing the House to be governed by Democrats.
He's going to keep his job. He'll keep his. You think Chuck Schumer is going to want to lose Mike Johnson? Why would Chuck Schumer want to lose Mike Johnson?
So we will see if the cost of doing this ends up being Speaker Johnson's job. But the fact that dozens of Democrats helped Republicans approve the rule to get these bills to a floor vote signals some might also be willing to help save his speakership if some Republicans try to fire him over this. Larry?
All right, Hillary Vaughn, thank you ever so much. Appreciate it. Couple thoughts from me on this whole foreign aid bill business. You know, sometimes when making difficult political decisions, it's useful to ask, what would Reagan do? Right now seems to be one of those times. House Republicans are faced with foreign aid funding bills that are not popular. On a procedural rule vote in order to bring the funding bills to the floor today, 55 Republicans opposed it. A small handful even want to take down Speaker Mike Johnson. Now, there are measures in those funding bills that many conservatives don't like, and there are measures that many conservatives believe should have been in the bills in the first place and are not. But what would Reagan do? Well, I believe the Gipper, for whom I worked as a budget deputy over 40 years ago, would support these bills. Why? Well, with all their imperfections, the basic point as I see it is this. We have to support, fund, and arm our allies. It's a very dangerous world out there. And President Joe Biden has made it a far more dangerous world because of his feckless, weak, indecisive, and outright mistaken policies in the last 3 years plus. Starting with Afghanistan, right through to mishandling Russia and Ukraine, appeasing Iran, wilting in the face of Chinese hostilities, curtailing the U.S. production of fossil fuels, opening the southern border into a catastrophic crime-laden disaster, and allowing more than 10 million illegal immigrants in the country. But conservatives know this and agree on it, The question is what to do, and there is no perfect answer. I believe Reagan would say yes. Arm Ukraine so Russia can't overrun it. Recognize that a lot of the $60 billion targeted there will help the U.S. industrial defense base. Help Taiwan because the Chinese Communist Party threatens them on a daily basis. And, of course, put up the $26 billion for Israel, which is double the original number because they are one of our greatest allies. And the very existence of the democratic Israeli state is being threatened. Reagan would surely counsel against the use of American troops, but he did, on many occasions, provide funding and weapon sales to our allies around the world who were helping us to fight Soviet communism. Today's new axis of evil, Russia, Iran, China, and North Korea, must not be allowed to prevail. Now, whether it's a new Cold War or not, the reality is those four countries are our enemy. And even on a limited basis, such as the foreign aid funding bills now on the House floor, will do something to help our friends and slow down our enemies. In a sense, House Republicans and conservatives can save Joe Biden from himself and from his failed policies. We don't particularly want to rescue him politically. But when it comes to national security, we want to support America first. Now, these bills are not going to be paid for, and that is most unfortunate. Also, there is no off-ramp negotiating mandate with respect to Ukraine, and there should be. And there are some very weak Chinese banking sanctions to stop them from buying Iranian oil, but that will come to nothing because the Bidens are never going to enforce it. By the way, I believe a Donald Trump presidency would threaten China with double or triple across-the-board tariffs until they stop funding Iran's war against Israel, or for that matter, Russia's war against Ukraine. But that's a separate issue. Perhaps the greatest tragedy in the House bill, H.R. 2, is not going to be in this package to close the border. Not even a core version is going to make it. Doesn't have the votes to pass the House in the next 24 hours. That's a tragedy, because that was a solid bill, would have closed the border. But then again, there are insufficient votes in the Democratic Senate to pass it now anyway. Yet for all this, I believe Reagan would have supported it. He was always a great believer that when negotiating, if you could get 70% now, you should take it and go for the 30% rest of it later on. Later on, that's the November 5th election. When Donald Trump can be president, the Senate turn Republican, and the House GOP picks up new reinforcements for a bigger majority. That's the get the rest later part. As Speaker Mike Johnson, he is a genuine supply-side constitutional conservative who unfortunately is playing with an incredibly thin deck of cards. For those that don't like him, all right, how about wait until next January for a vote? Personally, I support him and believe he has the potential to be a great House Speaker. And if Ronald Reagan were alive today, I believe he'd agree with me on all of it. Okay, that's my take. Like it or not, some will agree and some will disagree. Joining us now, we've got a great panel, Florida Congressman Mike Waltz and Aaron Cohn. Prince Aaron Cohn, Israeli special ops veteran, and knowledgeable people. Gentlemen, thank you for all of this. Mike Waltz, let me begin with you. Your take on this Israeli, I don't know exactly what to call it last night. It was certainly a limited action. A lot of us thought more shoes would fall. Some of us think more shoes will fall. But then again, Joe Biden has screwed this story up so badly, I'm not sure what to think anymore. What do you think, Congressman Waltz? You are an expert. You are a veteran. Tell me your thoughts, and then we're going to get to Prince Aaron Saul. Aaron Cohn, sorry.
Well, first, this was a clear message from Israel to Iran that your attack failed. You cannot hit us, but we can hit you. And we can not only hit you, we can reach out and touch your most sensitive sites, your most sophisticated Russian-built air defenses around your air base and around your nuclear enrichment sites. And I think they sent that message loud and clear. I expect both sides will tamp down from here for now. One, because Iran's massive attack failed. And two, because Israel needs to focus on Gaza. And Iran still has its insurance policy in Hezbollah to the north, which would be a very serious threat to Israel. But I just want to hit one more thing on your point, Larry, because you nailed it. The best thing Biden could do for Israel is cut off Iran's cash. We have a bill that has passed the House called the SHIP Act that would put secondary sanctions on Chinese buyers, brokers, refiners, shipping companies that are ultimately funding all of this in the Middle East. China's the big winner here right now. They're getting cheap oil. Iran is flush with cash because Biden walked away from maximum pressure. But the thing that's also upsetting why China is winning is our military is getting strung out from the Red Sea to the Mediterranean to all over Iraq, and they should be shifting to the Pacific. It's all because Iran is flush with cash. You got to cut it off.
You know, a strong president, a.k.a. a strong President Trump, would have been all over China for a couple of years, never would have opened up this, eased the sanctions, never. They're importing. Nope. Aaron, I'm going to get to you in a second. But Mike, they're importing 1.5 million barrels a day. It's about 60-70% above what they were getting a couple of years ago. That money is financing Iran.
That's right.
And that money is financing Hamas along with Hezbollah and the Houthis. And you know what? My recommendation is Trump, if you had a President Trump, he would say to Xi Jinping, I'm going to double your tariffs across the board. All right. I might even triple your tariffs.
That's right.
You won't sell a damn thing to the United States unless you stop financing this war against Israel and also financing the Russian war, too. So that is a key point. Okay. Aaron Cohn, I watched you last night with great interest, as I always do, and you were talking about a kind of layered approach with respect to Israel and Iran. Do you still think that here in the cold light of day this afternoon, or do you think we've seen the end of the Israeli incursion?
Larry, I think that Israel has a knack for not talking when they're engaged in active operations. And so last night with Trace, these were the would-be's, could-be's, and maybe's, and that's what I'm here to do. But I'm going to say this. Iran downplaying the strike, nothing more than a backdoor to get out of the reality that Israel is able to reach out and touch. And like you and I have been discussing since October, the last 6 months, Israel's got the capability to not only absolutely destroy Gaza, which they could have done on October 8th, Israel could destroy Iran. They took out Israel's nuclear scientist in 2020. And I can tell you that the Mossad, our foreign intelligence unit, was tracking that man since 2007. Israel's methodic and obsessive when it comes to their security, because we have to be. To respond to that first part of your question, I believe there could be more things happening. But Israel does its best work in the vanguard. It's the quiet operations that we don't know about. And obviously, the lens got put on Israel, the optics. I believe a phone call was made to the Pentagon or to the White House. They probably said, hey, we're going to tit for tat. That's the beating of the chest. In Hebrew, we say, Baruchim Abayim Lemizrat Tichon, which is welcome to the Middle East. That's the game that gets played back and forth. But the fact is that Israel hit extremely close to that nuclear facility. What they hit, we don't know. Was it an F-35 coordinated by their elite joint tactical JTAC unit lasing that missile, or was it a Predator? I don't care. Israel can get there from outside of Iran. They can work from Syria. They can work from Lebanon. They've got the capabilities. But again, Joe Biden's just kind of meddling in Israel's business, been doing it for 6 months. And it's time for Iran is the bigger threat here. There's so many things to list, Larry, between staging and how the world sees Iran. They're the major threat. They trained Hamas. They were paying them extra to come to Iran and train this terror group that infiltrated Israel. The Nukba, which is like their elite commando version, but came in. They were trained in Iran, and Iran's at the center of all this. And the longer we wait, the worse it is for Israel's national security, the worse it is for U.S. national security.
Now you're cooking.
And last night, Larry, I said it's time to take a ship.
No, now you're cooking.
I pulled a Kudlow, yeah.
There's too much bloody appeasement going on here. We know
that's
the
right.
Biden want to appease. Right. I know Mike Waltz agrees with me on this 100%. Look it, Israel could take out oil fields. Israel could take out drone sites. Israel could take out the ballistic missile sites. Israel could take out the nuclear sites. They could do all that if they wanted to, Aaron. That's what I'm worried about. They can do all that. Here, let me ask Congressman Waltz. Do you think Biden is holding this up? Do you think that Israel's listening to Biden? And maybe they're not going to do anything now because they're about to go into South Gaza and Rafah, or what? Because I'm befuddled by this, okay? And I'm not altogether happy about it. No one's a bigger supporter of Israel than I am. I just don't get what happened last night.
Well, you know, again, you can disagree with allies, with friends, but you do it quietly. You do it behind closed doors. Chuck Schumer calling for regime change in the middle of a war. Biden backing away from Israel and Bibi because he's worried about domestic politics in Michigan only has emboldened Iran and embolden our enemies all over the world. And you know, the new word out of this administration for appeasement is de-escalation.
Oh,
every time they
yeah.
back away, Larry, yeah. our yeah. adversaries move forward. And look, we've gone from the Abraham Accords under Trump to open warfare between Israel and Iran. Nobody's listening to Biden. Every time he says don't, they do. But I think there's an operational reality for Israel, and that is to finish off Hamas, hold off Hezbollah, deal with the aftermath in Gaza. And again, what we could be doing is shutting down the cash in Iran. Just under the Trump administration, all of these terrorist groups were complaining that they weren't getting the cash that they used to.
Right.
At the end of the day, if they can't afford to fight, they won't.
And we will. And it's going to happen again. No, but you were talking to Trace Gallagher last night, my colleague Trace Gallagher, about appeasement. I just want to put that back in. But the Bidens, the word, you're right, de-escalation is the new synonym for appeasement, but nobody's fooled. Aaron, I don't have a lot of time. In your judgment, is it possible that Israel is postponing a larger strike against Iran because they're going to step up the activity in southern Gaza and Rafah and finish off Hamas once and for all, God willing?
I think that Gaza was temporarily put on hold, that final invasion into Rafah, because Gallant, former Israeli SEAL commander, has been around. Decided that there was enough done in order for more intelligence to be collected. Let's slow things down. Sure, there's some appeasement going on there. But at the end of the day, Israel's not going to fully appease if it's a real security risk. Mm. That's one. Two, I believe that what we're going to see with Iran right now, they made a big mistake by attacking Israel with those 350 missiles and mm-hmm. suicide drones.
Mm-hmm.
Because now what it's done is going to open Israel up to play where they play best, which is low-intensity conflicts. So, and what we saw last night was it playing out in the air. And you know what? Let the Persians downplay it. I want to say this, the IRGC. And by the way, I want to make this really clear. Israel has no problem with the Iranian people. They're good people.
Right.
I mean it.
100%.
I mean, they're good people.
No, I agree with that.
I'll go in for a gourmet sabzi and a tadik any day of the week. Cheli memnun.
Yes.
Shikarmi korni baba all day. But the IRGC is
said,
a much larger... they've got great food. It's a much larger threat, Larry. Signaling, I think Israel's going to start cooking up some small selective ops. Israel just took down one of the targeted assassinations. That's what Israel does better than any country in the world. You can't touch
All
on
right.
our side.
All
so
right.
I think we're going to see more of this cooking.
Prince Aaron Cohen. Mike Kaltz, before I lose you, am I wrong? I think Reagan would have supported this funding bill. It ain't perfect. There's a lot of things you and I would change in it, but it is what it is. And they are allies. Israel, Ukraine, Taiwan, Lord knows. What do you think? You think Reagan would have supported this, Mike Waltz, or am I barking up the wrong tree?
I don't think we'd be in the mess in the first place, Larry. If it were Reagan or Trump,
right.
these wars wouldn't
right.
even be happening, number one, because they both know you drive down the price of oil internationally below $50 a barrel. Neither Russia nor
yeah.
Iran could even afford the war.
Yeah.
They'd be worried about their economy collapsing.
You're right.
That's what we should be doing. That's the strategic play.
You're right. You know what else, Mike? My honor. I worked for Reagan and I worked for Trump. My honor. And I actually know Prince Aaron Cohn. How about that? The second honor. Gentlemen, thank you ever so much. Have a wonderful weekend. Thanks for helping the show. Folks, we're going to take a quick break coming up. Congressman French Hill on Speaker Johnson's foreign aid package. And French has got some important financial issues that could be used to fund Ukraine without spending American taxpayer money. And remember, you can always catch Kudlow Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. right here on Fox Business. And if you can't catch us at 4 for some reason, please just text your favorite 9-year-old and she will show you how to DVR the show. And you will never miss a Ronald Reagan decision. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
Doctor, great to have you with us on Fox News Sunday.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So I just finished your book, The 2% Way, which encourages all of us not to worry about making huge, unrealistic strides, but little changes along the way to finding success. And in the book, you tell the story of yourself as a young man. You wrote down in a notebook, when you grow up, number one, play football in the NFL. Number two, become a neurosurgeon. Lofty goals, but you did nail both of these. How do you want to inspire a young person today who feels like maybe that's not realistic for them or having more than one big dream is too much?
Oftentimes we're struggling with comparing ourselves to other people on social media, friends, family, everyone else in our circle. Instead of focusing on our lane, who we are, having those small wins, those small incremental growths every single day, and that process making us a better person who uplifts the community around us. And so I'll tell a young person who's hearing my story, reading my story, that you don't have to be a neurosurgeon. You don't have to be an NFL player to have success. Success can look like you. It can be like you. It can come from your zip code. It can come from your family. So that 2% way, I think, is a great first start in achieving those goals.
I'm a huge Florida State fan. You were one of our greatest players. And we all remember you showing up at this game after you had been in an interview and found out you were going to be a Rhodes Scholar. What was that like for you, moving between those different spaces?
Being able to have that day where I won a scholarship down in Alabama, flew up to Maryland, got into the game around the second quarter, joined my teammates, we won the game. It was a big victory for me, my family, student athletes, my university. But I do credit my parents coming from the Bahamas, making sure that my brothers and I, focus on education, had great academic prowess, intellectual capital. We were trying to attain that even before athletic glory. All of that foundational influence that I had from my parents, I think, set me up for that moment where, those parallel roads of going to Oxford as a Rhodes Scholar, only 32 people get them every year, a really prestigious award, versus going to the National Football League, coming off a really great and All-American type junior season at Florida State University.
You were working hard at everything that you were doing around the clock, showing up early, staying late, putting in extra hours, doing work on your own time, looking for mentors. I mean, this wasn't a mistaken success. These were very hard choices.
Absolutely. I think football, that sort of growth and that experience that I had in failure, getting knocked down, getting back up, playing the next play, overcoming adversity, taking tough coaching. And now I've used those same principles in trying to be a better husband, trying to be a better father, obviously trying to be a better neurosurgeon who's able to take care of patients by understanding teamwork, coaching, pressure, mitigating those pressures, adapting in very tough situations, being able to prepare properly through MRI and CT scans and x-rays of our patients prior to getting to the operating room so that I'm able to have a plan A, B, C, and D if all those first ones go wrong. And so football was a great preparation. That chapter's over. Now moving into medicine and being an adult with, four kids, two sets of twins and a wife, loving wife, it's all worked itself out pretty well.
Yes, I love this, that you have two sets of twins. You're both professional. She's a dentist. You're in your neurosurgery residency, finishing that up. I know family is big for you. How do you manage all of those things?
My wife, LaToya, is an amazing support system for me. We have my mother-in-law who lives with us in the house. My parents live 30 minutes away, have a nanny. So it's a total village for those four kids as they grow, as they move around.
Wherever you are, whenever you want it, Fox News Digital is the world according to Fox. The top headlines other sites won't touch. Unmatched coverage you won't get anywhere else. And the stories that keep America clicking. No one does it like FoxNews.com. Plus, download the Fox News app to get breaking news, alerts, and all your favorite shows on the go. And if you can't watch, listen.
The Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast.
I'm Brett Baer.
I'm Dana Perino, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Fox News Digital, the world according to Fox.
All right, just a little bit more about this big foreign aid bill, $100 billion, and how to pay for it with my very dear friend, Arkansas Congressman French Hill. So, French, I went out on a limb. I said if Ronald Reagan, sometimes you ask, what would Reagan do? I said if Reagan were here, he'd vote for it. There's a lot of things wrong with this bill. I went and listed them in my introduction, but it would be, you know, Reagan said, take the 60-70%. These are our allies. We should arm our allies and help them against the terrorist countries, Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran. What do you think, French Hill?
Larry, great to be with you. I think President Reagan would be squarely in favor of this Speaker Johnson national security bill because it's peace through strength. That's precisely his strategy for countering our adversaries. And we are in a period of an axis of evil led by Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran. And that's all addressed in this package.
You know, French, I should have put that in my riff. Reagan's dictum was peace through strength. And this provides some additional strength. So good for you. You're still the smartest guy in the House. No question about it. Now, tell us a minute. Remember, well, we are a business show. There's going to be possibly a way to pay for some of this Ukrainian money. Unfrozen assets could be frozen and unfrozen to pay Ukraine $5 billion. And your bill, the repo bill, and then Europe may come along and they got $300 billion. Just in the next minute, French, sort it out for us. Former banker and treasury man that you are, besides being a House member. How could this work to our advantage?
Well, Larry, it's simple. There's about $5 to $7 billion of Russian central bank assets in the United States and almost $300 billion, as you say, in Europe. I propose in the Repo Act with Chairman Mike McCaul of Foreign Affairs Committee that we take that frozen money and that we convert the title to a trust in the name of benefiting Ukraine for reconstruction, for budget gap. Let's use the $300 billion of sovereign Russian money instead of American, French, or UK taxpayers' dollars to rebuild Ukraine. Cover their budget deficit here in the short run, and say if a permanent member of the Security Council invades another nation, they're not exempt from the ultimate sanction, which is to have their sovereign assets frozen and then converted for reparations for the victim.
So your $5 billion is part of this Mike Johnson package. That's for starters. Now, you also, you've been emailing me, you've got favorable votes in Europe that may move in the direction of the $300 billion, which would infuriate the Russians, which is why it would be so fabulous to use it to help Ukraine.
This is the ultimate deterrence. And we had a vote on April 16th in the Parliamentary Council of Europe in favor of converting those frozen assets in Brussels to forfeited assets, put them in a trust fund for the benefit of Ukraine. This benefits taxpayers and it sends a signal, as again, as I say, to the Putin regime, get out of Ukraine, stop hostile activities in Ukraine, sue for peace. You're not going to be able to stay in Ukraine. This is bringing it to an end. We want to do that militarily with this package, but I also want to see this economic deterrence factor also contribute to Putin's ending this conflict.
So you're actually, you're persuaded that the Europeans might play ball. I mean, this could be a very big thing. I mean, actually, it's bigger for them than for us in that sense, but you're saying there's $300 billion worth of Russian money, actually euros or whatever the currency is going to be, and that money could be used to finance Ukraine.
Right. And that's what just central bank sovereign assets. There are other Russian Federation sovereign assets in these countries that, in my view, could also be used. But I'm focused strictly right now on the central banking assets. And I think you've seen support in Europe from the chancellor in the United Kingdom, the foreign secretary in the United Kingdom, and this vote with the Council of Europe. So we've made progress there. I think it's the right thing to do.
All right. French, the last 20 seconds. These funding bills going to pass tonight and tomorrow?
I think they'll pass tomorrow afternoon. I think America will come together through peace, through strength, to tell authoritarians from Xi to Putin, stay out of other people's countries.
You're so good, French Hill. You are just so good. I hope everybody's listening. French Hill, Congressman from Arkansas. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. Talk soon.
All the best.
All right.
See you, Larry.
You betcha. Coming up on Kudlow, Hugh Hewitt. Great, the great Hugh Hewitt. On why we are in a war with Iran. But unfortunately, Joe Biden doesn't seem to know it. How about that? We're going to straighten that out, too. I'm Kudlow. We're coming right back, folks. Stick with us.
Invest, save, spend. How can you make the most of your tax return? Get the best tips for this year's refund, plus CEO pay growth, from higher compensation to who's making the most. Jack breaks it all down on Barron's Roundtable. Brought to you by Global X, Beyond Ordinary ETFs.
When demo experts leveled the legendary Last Frontier Hotel in 2007, they brought the curtain down on what many remember as Vegas's golden era. Call it the Strip 1.0. That four-mile stretch of Highway 91 was built by an unlikely lineup of visionaries, swindlers, and entertainers. And it all started with the railroad. Las Vegas, Nevada, 1905. The Union Pacific started running between Los Angeles and Salt Lake City. Vegas was a natural halfway point to refuel. Natural springs created an oasis of green. Las Vegas is Spanish for the meadows.
The one thing it had was it had water here.
It also had Nevada's famously loose legal code.
When Las Vegas was laid out by the railroad, they set aside two blocks for all of the vices. And that's where all the gambling was, that's where all the bars were, that's where all the brothels were.
In 1931, the Hoover Dam Project changed Vegas's fortunes.
It basically saved Las Vegas during the depths of the Depression.
The dam was meant to bring power throughout the region, but it also brought people.
You saw the population of Las Vegas grow from about 5,000 to about 25,000.
Las Vegas was already known for illegal gambling, so the state of Nevada decided to take a cut for itself by legalizing it.
There was no vetting of finances, no environmental impact statement, nothing like that. Just boom, you want a club, you've got a club.
Fremont Street was the main drag, and the Northern Club, right by the train station, was the first gambling club to go legit. Damn bosses tried to keep their men on the straight and narrow, but it was no use.
When they were done with a week of hard work, 12-hour days, they wanted to let off steam. So they came into Las Vegas.
The early gambling halls on Fremont Street were very basic.
They were very rugged and not that glamorous at all. But as more of these gambling parlors came to be built, they one by one realized that they needed something to stand out. And that is where neon comes in.
These people really lit up their buildings, and they didn't care what the building was or what your experience was, really, once you were in. It was, come in because you like my sign and spend some money in my joint.
At the end of the sewage line, the many tanks and agitators at the Jones Island treatment plant are hard at work cleaning the torrents of wastewater from last night's storm, all under the watchful eye of engineer Ricardo Santiago.
Jones Island treatment facility sits in about 75 acres of land, and we are capable of treating about 330 MGDs, or million gallons a day.
Here's a quick rundown on how all that happens. First, the wastewater is left to sit for about 2 hours, allowing solids to settle at the bottom. After that, bacteria-eating microbes are added to the water, along with plenty of bubbles, in a stage known as aeration. Finally, the water is pumped into basins where one chemical, sodium hypochlorite, destroys any remaining bacteria, before another chemical, sodium bisulfate, is added to neutralize the first chemical. And just like that, there you have it. Unsanitary to pristine in just 7 hours. But none of that can happen without these, the screw pumps, responsible for shuttling wastewater above ground and into the treatment plant.
Hello to our friends watching in Costa Rica on Cable Tica. Thank you for choosing Fox. Keep it right here.
The Evening Edit with Elizabeth McDonald.
One of the biggest goals of the show is to look out for Americans. We pull back the curtain and show you what's really going on.
Elizabeth McDonald is breaking the biggest stories. The Evening Edit on Fox Business, invested in you.
All right, my old friend Hugh Hewitt writes a spiffy article on Fox News. We are in a war with Iran, but Biden doesn't know it. Trump does. Yes, he does. Hugh Hewitt joins me now, host of the Hugh Hewitt radio show and star of radio, television, movies, and everything else. Hugh, it's good to see you. Thanks very much for coming on the show. Read your article and loved it.
Good to see you, Larry.
I mean, Biden's in a war. I say Iran, but you're mentioning it's obviously Russia and China, North Korea and so forth. Why don't they know? We've had 3.5 years, Hugh, of appeasement. One after another. And they have these meetings with China and they get yelled at and, you know, Chinese yell at them and they cower them and they don't fight back. We don't take actions. It's very un-Trump-like. I mean, what is the problem with the Bidens? Let's start with that.
Let's start at sunk cost, Larry. It's good to see you again. And I wish you were around the White House still so you could explain in Pittsburgh Steeler very simple language to the people around the White House. The JCPOA did not work. It was a bad idea. Iran is a bad actor. They've been a bad actor since the Iranian Revolution. They are working for China and with China, and they're working for Russia and with Russia. And those three adversaries, I mean, there are some junior partners, North Korea, Venezuela, Cuba, we know them. But those are the big three, China, Russia, and Iran. And we're in a war, and the reason they can't see Iran is because they're so heavily invested in the mythology that President Obama built up about, let's have a grand bargain with Iran. Well, they're religious fanatics, Larry. You know that, I know that. And I heard you ask French Hill, and before that, your other guest, what would Reagan do? You and I both know, we were both in that White House, and President Reagan sent weapons to the Mujahideen because they were fighting the Soviets in Afghanistan.
Right.
He would send this aid to Ukraine. He would, of course, stand by Israel and by Taiwan.
I agree. I mean, I think you're 100% right. And Mujahideen, that's a very good example. Hugh, how much of this? They're blinded by many things. You know, this mystical belief in human rights and the League of United Nations, and we're all civilized countries, which they are not. How much of this is about climate change? You know, you take a look around, appeasing Iran. We just lifted sanctions from that great democratic state called Venezuela. We never put sanctions on most of the Russian oil companies or their bankers. I mean, you know what? They're fighting wars and they don't want to do it. And how much of this is about climate change? And then how much of this is about cheap gasoline, Hugh Hewitt? These are, you know, to me, this gets in the way.
Some of it is climate change, like with Secretary Kerry. He's clearly in the thrall of climate change ideology, really theology. But a lot of it is the hangover from the Obama era when they invested so heavily in the Iran deal. And President Trump got out of the Iran deal because it was a terrible deal. It was bad for the world. It was good for Iran. It was terrible for Israel. It was terrible for the United States. And they are still wedded to it. And I really don't know if we're ever going to get this wing of the Democratic Party. And it's the Barack Obama, Ben Rhodes, and I think Jake Sullivan, Tony Blinken wing, certainly Wendy Sherman, who, very nice person, but she was wrong in 94 when she did the North Korea deal. She was wrong in the Iran deal. She was beaten up on Israel the week before they were attacked by Iran with 320 or 350 missiles and drones and ballistics. I'll tell you, this group just cannot see the world as it is. They want it to be the world that they wish it was.
I mean, Hugh, I think that President Trump who wants to obviously regain office, he sees this. He doesn't like these treaties. He doesn't like these negotiations. He didn't like multilateralism. He liked one-on-one, and he wanted America's interests first. Is diametrically opposed to what the Bidens and the Obamas want to see. In some sense, Trump is changing the whole Republican Party. I mean, what is good for the United States? That's like the first question to ask. And, Hugh, I think that's a question that Ronald Reagan used to ask also.
It was internalized for a lot of people for many, many decades, Larry. But you can't look at the border and not understand that there is a crisis there that concerns every single American. Mm. And when I last talked to the former president about 2 weeks ago, I asked him, what do you make of these 44,000 Chinese nationals who have crossed into the country over our southern border in the last 18 months? He said, they're building an army within. They're building an army within. Mm. And I think he's a realist, and we need realism.
Well, if he comes back into power, I can tell you, I mean, you know this, he is not going to coddle Iran. He is not going to appease Iran. That's a good place to start. I mean, right then and there. And the same thing with China. China, Hugh, last point, China, by buying oil from Iran and Russia, they are financing two wars against the United States. And the Bidens never utter one peep about that. Give you the last word.
That is exactly right. I don't need a last word because that is exactly right. China is controlling its two main legatees, which are Iran and Russia. And they give Russia and Iran give China the oil on which to run the China grand plan for the next 100 years. We've got to keep it clear. Donald Trump had it clear in his mind. The Republicans are getting it right on the Hill as we speak, and I hope it keeps going forward. We got to bankrupt Iran a second time, as you guys did in the first Trump administration.
Great stuff. Hugh Hewitt, it's wonderful to see you again. Wonderful. Thanks for helping us. Hope to see you soon.
Good to see you, Larry.
All right, folks, we're going to switch gears. Talk about the protesters at Columbia University. Anti-Semitism and DEI is still alive and well there. We've got DeRoy Murdoch, Fox News contributor, senior fellow at the American Spectator, contributor at the Daily Caller. Goodness, very busy. Roma Duravi, she was the Kudlow aide, kept me out of trouble in the White House, strategic comms director. And Brooke Goldstein, founder of the Lawfare Project. Hello, Brooke. Brooke, let me start with you because you're furthest away. I want to be even-handed. I know you've been on the network today. Anything changing at Columbia? I mean, I talked to Dershowitz last night about this whole thing. I know what your views are. DEI fosters anti-Semitism, and anti-Semitism is the ultimate hate speech. When will Columbia or the other universities, the elites, any of them for that matter, understand that? DEI goes to anti-Semitism, and that goes to the hate speech.
Well, DEI is not just about fostering anti-Semitism. It fosters anti-Americanism, and that's what really this is all about. It's not just a Jewish issue. This is an issue that all Americans should care about. You know, your past guest mentioned that we are at war, and not only are we funding the enemy without Iran to the tune of billions of dollars, paying, you know, Russia and China, dealing with them economically and for gas, we are funding the enemy within. We are pumping millions of dollars to these institutes of higher education that are radicalizing our population. And frankly, Biden's Department of Education and the Office of Civil Rights has completely failed the Jewish community and the American people. There have been dozens of complaints that have been outstanding for years. My organization, the Lawfare Project, filed the first complaint after Trump's executive order, which allowed Title VI of the Civil Rights Act to apply to religion, to the Jewish community. That complaint from 2019 is still outstanding. And to think, if the Department of Education had dealt with Columbia University in 2019, would we be seeing now what we are seeing? And guess what? All of those protesters, the 108 protesters that were arrested, and thank you to the NYPD for doing that, they were just let out. New York is no bail, and they are right now back at Columbia University with their pro-Hamas and pro-terror chanting and organizing.
Roma, if the boards of directors, if the corporate boards of directors of these schools don't change, the policies won't change. The presidents report to the boards. It's just that simple. We learn that with Harvard. We learn that with MIT and Penn. We're seeing it with... Now, the woman running Columbia may not be the worst, because at least she toss them into jail for one night. But we have a lot more work to do, is my point. There's no victory here. There's no quasi-semi, not even a small victory.
We do. You know, right now, American college campuses are, frankly, breeding grounds for anti-Semitism. And that should scare everyone, not just Jewish Americans. It should scare every American. You know, this is supposed to be the highest form of education in this country. People come from all over the world to attend our universities. And what are they seeing right now? What is the world seeing right now? Hamas flags being flown on American college campuses.
Terrific.
They're seeing American students and American people who are not students, who are trespassers on these campuses, chanting death to America and death to Israel. So, you know, there's no way to excuse that form of speech. There's no way to excuse these actions. You know, I'm thankful to see that the NYPD actually arrested these individuals, and they will be, you know, having that trespasser violation on their record now forever. But that's just step one. You know, we're going to see this repeatedly unless the Biden administration changes the narrative on anti-Semitism in this country. It's really become a larger issue.
Jerai Murdoch, a better story, a better story. A good interview with Fox Digital, Melania Trump and Rick Grenell, who was a foreign policy advisor in the Trump administration. A unity story, okay? A pro-America story. Melania will be speaking once again to the Log Cabin Republicans, a group I've spoken to many times. I know you have as well. Bringing in gays and others and so forth. Bringing people together to help America. I mean, Melania in this interview talks at some length about the values of freedom and equality, not equality of results, but just generic equality. So there's something good going on.
Yeah, that's a good thing. And the basic message of the Log Cabin Republicans is not this whole transgender thing and, you know, let's talk naughty to your 5 and 6 year old. It's about things like national security and economic growth and,
mm-hmm. right.
and having people working and being able to make enough money to pay their bills and all that sort of thing. And there are many gay Americans in this country who are not interested in this transgender agenda and you know, a lot of things that are sort of borderline pedophilia. So I'm very happy to see Melania is giving that speech. Rick Grenell was, of course, the first gay man ever to serve in American cabinet mm-hmm. as mm-hmm. acting director of national intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was. And I think that you know, this is a group Trump has addressed. And I think there are a good number of gay Americans who are going to vote Republican this fall because, you know, the whole transgender agenda, all that sort of thing is just not very appealing at all. It's quite horrifying.
Brooke, can I ask you one more thing? This is not a unity story particularly. Well, it is a unity story in the wrong direction. This Kathleen Maher, who runs NPR, the whistleblower got fired. In the newsroom at NPR, let's see, 87 Democrats, 0 Republicans. She works for had worked for the World Economic Forum at Davos. I'm just reading this. The Atlantic Council, the Council on Foreign Relations. I mean, she's a complete left winger. She's already said publicly she doesn't believe in free speech. And they get about $250 million a year from the federal government. What do you make of that, Brooke?
I say good riddance to bad rubbish. Absolutely insanity that the taxpayer is funding politicized speech on our public radio waves. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how NPR turns itself around.
Yeah. You're holding your breath, Brooke, on that NPR turnaround? I'm not holding my breath. Good riddance to bad rubbish. I think that sums it up. I'm sorry we're out of time. Good riddance to bad rubbish, though. That's a nice way to end it. Jerai Murdoch, Roma Darabi, Brooke Goldstein, thanks to all of you. Folks, up next, Senator Eric Schmidt. And he's going to defend Drill Baby Drill and try to teach Joe Biden something about Earth Day, what Earth Day should really look like. I'm Kudlow. Earth Day, sure. Drill Baby Drill.
Monday. Dave Ramsey on The Big Money Show. Get insight on the challenges facing business owners as Brian Brenberg reports live from the Ramsey Solutions Summit Monday.
So we were in a hot LZ. We had to lift because of danger of enemy fire, and it was dark, and I thought I was going to fall 500 feet to my death, but I still would have died if I would have been left in a hot LZ in Baghdad. Talk to me about that day.
Oh, stressful. It was hour after hour, landing after landing. You sort of lose count. And the things we were seeing, of course, are hard to see, difficult things to take in. I think we went for more than 13 hours, so it was night into day into night again. It's scary, you know?
We landed in the backyard, essentially, of Saddam's palace.
Very tight zone, one of the tighter. It was a triangle. Only one bird could land at a time. And so the dangerous part about that is the river was over there where they were taking shots. And so the other bird having to hover, I'm not sure we ever moved so quickly in landings as that zone.
Yeah, you know, from my own recollection, probably the most frightening moments were seeing people shooting at us from rooftops. They were fighting hard to not let that palace fall.
They were. That one of the middle trips, it's hard to keep them straight. We took so many in there, but I know my crew chief had to take a couple of those guys out, and thank goodness that he did, because it doesn't take much. An AK-47 round could take our helicopters out of the air.
Well, it's an amazing story, and I must confess, I was leaping for joy to get to spend time with you. We had a great lunch, but I'll give you a chance to embarrass me now, looking back on those days, because we formed a bond. I really felt to be a bond part of you, and for our viewers, I'm not sure I have the tape, but the Red Dragons shaved my head, making me an honorary Marine. Do you remember that?
Marine forever. I do. I was not part of that, if you remember. But I think I got the sense that you were honored by that. Not only did they shave your head, right? They duct taped you to the stretcher?
They did.
Stood you up against the wall?
They did. I got the full initiation. Amanda Haines, congratulations. It's great to see you.
Thank you, Griff. So good to see you, too. Thanks for having me.
The fishing industry is hugely important to the New England area, but from February to April, a lot of the waters off of Massachusetts are closed to lobstering to protect these North Atlantic right whales, and more closures are on the way. Entanglements are one of the leading causes of injury and death for the whale species, and lobster and crab fishing require a lot of ropes and vertical lines that have a higher risk of leading to entanglement. The federal government is making emergency additional closures next month, closing another 200 square miles off the coast of Massachusetts to lobster and Jonah crab fishing to protect the right whales. It's concerning to the Massachusetts Lobstermen's Association because there's less and less water for them to fish. So NOAA Fisheries are trying to come up with ways to save the endangered whales while still making sure fishermen in New England can do their jobs. They have a gear library where scientists, manufacturers, and fishermen are working together on new ropeless gear. There are three types of it, and dozens of fishermen have already tried it, many of them lobster and crab fishermen.
Our goal is to keep the fishing industry profitable and work with the fishing industry to help them come up with solutions that will help them maintain that profitability, maintain their capability to fish in these closed areas.
The gear is still in its research and development stage, but fishermen can reach out to trial it. They'll ship it anywhere from Rhode Island to Maine, and they'll even give fishermen a stipend for providing their feedback. In Hyannis, Massachusetts, Katie Byrne, Fox Weather.
All right, joining me now, Missouri Senator Eric Schmidt. Senator Schmidt, thank you, sir. So let me get this right. Joe Biden is cooking up an Earth Day celebration. He's going to close down fossil fuel, particularly in ANWR. Okay, Earth Day, close down. I don't get it, Senator Schmidt. Help me out here, sir.
Well, Larry, no country in the history of the world's ever declared war on its own natural resources, except this administration. A lot of countries, of course, you know, have gone to war over natural resources. We have all the natural resources we need right under our feet in this country. We can be energy dominant, exported to our friends and allies around the world. But instead, Joe Biden's retreating. And it's not like people aren't going to be using gas. It's not like people aren't going to be using energy. We're just going to have to get it from somewhere else. I questioned Secretary Granholm in a committee hearing this week. We had the lowest level of our amount of oil in our strategic petroleum reserve we've had in generations right now. It's not been replenished. It's a national security issue. It's also not in our economic interest. So not only is it a war on energy, it's a war on the middle class. You know, the truck driver that's got to fill that gas tank up every week, it's just gotten a lot more expensive. And it's because these ridiculous decisions like suspending LNG exports and, like, you know, stopping us drilling in Alaska.
Yeah, for all of anywhere. So a new Harvard poll out today. It's very interesting. Byron York reporting. Young people, 18 to 20s, I think 18 to 25 years old, whatever. Young people, which is more important, inflation or climate change? 60-40 inflation. Which is more important, a job or climate change? 60-40 a job. I mean, I don't think Biden doesn't even know his own politics.
Well, it doesn't make any economic sense for people. They're realizing that just like buying a home now is twice as expensive as it was just a few years ago. The policies of the Biden administration have been a total disaster. Younger voters see that. You know, they're hoping to have a future. And there's no future in this ridiculous policy they have related to climate alarmism. It's weird, Larry. It's almost like a religion. You know, they're talking about, you know, worshiping sun gods and, you know, animal sacrifice now with cows. It's just, it's totally nuts. And it's certainly not in America's best interest.
And you shut down our fossil fuel. So then we need Russia. We need Iran. We need Venezuela. I mean, how nutty is that? Last few seconds, sir.
Yeah, we've got the cleanest energy in the world, right? And so if you care about the environment, you do it here. But that's not what they're doing.
Senator Eric Schmidt, best of the best. Thank you, sir. Talk soon.
Thanks, Larry.
Folks, we'll be right back with my last word.
Many Americans will be traveling in style this summer. Several airlines are anticipating carrying a record number of travelers this upcoming season, including an increased demand for first-class tickets. Industry specialists say despite the growing inflation, people are still traveling and customers are willing to pay a little more for additional space and services. Meta launched a new upgraded version of its artificial intelligence assistant, Meta AI, across all its applications. The tool will be available in Facebook Messenger, Instagram, and WhatsApp. The AI assistant is also capable of creating images and animations more quickly and can update them for users as they write. The tech giant has built Meta AI, which will allow people to use the tool separately from their apps. And while we were dreaming, Taylor Swift dropped her latest album, The Tortured Poets Department. The artist released a second batch of songs after her first drop at midnight on Friday, surprising fans and nearly breaking the internet. The highly anticipated release is expected to be a bestseller, given the billions the artist earned last year during her blockbuster Eras tour. It's currently on hiatus and picks up on May 9th in France. That's business. I'm Jerry Willis.
Well, here is where sargassum from Fort Lauderdale's beaches end up. It is smelly, as you would expect, and there's bugs hovering over it. However, it's not here to sit in a pile, but instead transform and serve a new purpose. The amount of sargassum multiplying in our ocean and washing up on the beaches in 2023 might be the largest yet. The University of South Florida and NASA tracks it via satellite, noting 6.1 tons of it out there spanning over 5,000 miles in large clumps.
As we've taken the data in recently,
they're noticing this year's numbers compared to last year's aligns with USF's expectation.
So about three times as much so far, which could taper off or could remain at a strong pace.
And it's got to go somewhere. So they chose a local park.
As you can see from this point here, it's delivered from the beach in our trucks. It is taken and is loaded on that hill up there where it sits and is covered for 120 days. And it composts, it warms up, and it breaks down. So we get a yard for every 10 yards we put in, and then we put it on the processed pile, and there it is made into good dirt.
Providing free soil for the city to use, even giving residents access to take some home at no charge.
This is the gold standard with respect to composting seaweed in the state of Florida. We're the only ones that hold a registration for composting seaweed with the Department of Environmental Protection, and we plan on doing it till we can't anymore. It's the best standard that we have. It works really great, and we save $300,000 and $350,000 in savings with trucking costs and landfill space.
And they could be composting a lot of sargassum in the coming months. Experts at the University of South Florida expect that peak between May and July. Reporting here from Fort Lauderdale in Florida, I'm Brandi Campbell, Fox Weather.
Hello to our Fox fans watching in Mexico. Thanks for watching Fox on Sky. If you have any questions or comments about one or all of our shows, email us at foxaroundtheworld@foxnews.com.
In business, you need to stay a step ahead.
Your top stories right now.
They've all gone up. Look at that.
So download the free Fox Business app. Just scan the code on your screen.
You got the NASDAQ moving ahead comfortably.
With the markets at your fingertips, get the latest from Wall Street to Washington with the insight investors need.
So here's the good news, folks.
Let's take a quick look at the markets.
The Fox Business app makes it easy to be in the know wherever you go.
Let's get right down to it.
Download the Fox Business app from your app store or scan the QR code on screen now.
So I'll close with this. What would Reagan do? Peace through strength. Reagan understood that. Trump understands that. Mr. Biden does not understand that. And by the way, what would Reagan do? He would help retire Joe Biden. Oops, there, I said it. And now...
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.